Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Maddie.
Do you like horror movies?
I sure do.
Well, did you know that most horror movies are inspired by real-life horror?
Really? Like what?
Well, take The Shining, for instance. That's based on Stephen King's real-life addictions, or The Purge, which could be our country any minute now.
Oh, and The Strangers, which is based on a real-life murder. People should be talking about these things.
Hey! Guys.
Oh, hey, Producer
Michael. Michael,
hi. Well, I hate to break it to you, but somebody already is. It's you.
That's right. We are Frygay the 13th, the podcast where we talk about horror in real life and horror in media, all from an LGBTQ perspective.
Because we gay, y'all.
We are proud members of the Legion Podcast Network, and we can be found on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.
And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Come along with us on this crazy journey, and as always,
get slayed.
Hello, hello, hello there, and welcome back to Bumps in the Night, a true crime podcast focusing on cases you may not have ever known happened. I'm your host, Divya, and hey guys, welcome back. I hope that you guys are having a really good weekend, and I just want to quickly plug in my social media. So you can find me at BITN Podcast on Twitter and on Instagram, and you can email me at bumpsinthenight@gmail.com. So there is a misspelling error in it. So instead of in, it's im. So it's bumpsinthenight@gmail.com. And you can use that to get in contact with me, or if you want to suggest a case that you want me to do, so I can do it and I can add it on the list and hopefully be able to do that case. So that I just wanted to quickly get the social media thing out of the way. And now we are going to be talking about today's case. So today we will be discussing the mysterious disappearance of Aisha Jaquila Degree. Aisha's parents, Harold and Aquila Degree, were married on February 14, 1988 on Valentine's Day. A year later, Aquila would give birth to the couple's son, O'Brien, and Aisha herself on August 5th, 1990. O'Brien and Aisha were raised on 3404 Oakhurst Drive in the somewhat rural area north of Shelby, North Carolina. Aisha and O'Brien grew up in a loving and somewhat strict home. Their parents limited their television time and also had no computer in the house. In a 2013 JET interview, Aquila would say that, quote, "Every time you turned on the TV, there was some pedophile who had lured somebody's child away via the internet," end quote. Their life was centered around family, church, and their education. They attended Macedonia Missionary Baptist Church. O'Brien and Aisha were both independent children, as they were able to let themselves in the home and did their homework while waiting for their parents to arrive home from work. Aisha was 4'6", 137.2 centimeters tall, and was 60 pounds, about 27.2 kilograms. She was an African-American girl with black hair, which was regularly styled in pigtails, and had brown eyes. Aisha was said to be a happy, polite, and cautious girl. She followed her father in having a quiet nature and was said to have been very close to her older brother. In February 2000, Aisha was 9 years old and was in the fourth grade at Falston Elementary School. Aisha was described as a well-rounded student with an exceptional attendance record. Not only did she excel in her studies, especially science and mathematics, she enjoyed sports, playing both basketball and baseball. On February 11, 2000, which was a Friday, the Cleveland County schools were closed, meaning Aisha and O'Brien did not have school that day. As their parents were working, they went over to their Aunt Alicia's house, who lived in the same neighborhood and on the same street. Later that day, the children attended basketball practice at their school. Aisha was the star point guard of her team, the Falston Bulldogs. I presume that the practice was a last-minute practice as they had a big game the following day. On the 12th of February 2000, which was a Saturday, both Aisha and O'Brien had pee-wee basketball games at Burns Middle School. I was unsure what pee-wee meant and had looked it up. So according to the Lexicon Dictionary, pee-wee is a level of amateur sport involving children aged 8 or 9 in the US or 12 or 13 in Canada. The girls' team went first. It was their first game of the season. Unfortunately, Aisha would foul out and her team lost the game. Understandably, Aisha and her teammates were upset and were reported to have been crying. Aisha would even go over to tell her mother that her leg hurt. Aquila would tell her that her leg was okay, and Aisha would visibly cheer up and would later go on to play with her friends. When O'Brien's game was going on, she cheered loud and hard for her brother. Later on, Aisha would go over to her cousin's house for a sleepover. The next day, February 13, Sunday, Harold, Aquila, and O'Brien would pick up Aisha and they would go to church together. After church, the family went over to a relative's house for lunch. Aisha had gotten Valentine's Day candy from her grandmother, Joanne, which made her really happy. The family left with Harold going to work at his second shift at PBG Industries. Here's where things get a little inconsistent and hazy. Different reports have different timings on what happened. These inconsistencies were pointed out by Reddit user Rez Berlium in the Unresolved Mysteries thread on Reddit. The first inconsistency was the timing of which there was a power outage. There was a car accident nearby in which a vehicle hit a power pole, causing a power outage. The power had either gone out just before 9 p.m. or at 10 p.m., though the just before 9 p.m. timeline was more corroborated. It is said that the children were not able to take their nightly bath because of the lack of power, though it is noteworthy to say that they normally had their bath at 8 p.m., so it is pretty weird that they were unable to take their bath because the power only went off at 9. The second inconsistency was the timing of which Aisha turned in for the night. So there are three different timings. One that Aisha went to bed at 8 p.m., one that she went to bed at 9 p.m., which was her normal bedtime on weekdays, and on weekends it was 10 p.m. And that was lastly, the time that Aisha went to sleep was at midnight. So Harold, Aisha's dad, came home about midnight from work. He saw that Aisha was laying on the couch in jeans and a purple and white 100 degrees hot in Atlanta t-shirt. Harold prompted her to go to bed. So at 12:30 a.m., Harold would check on his children. Aisha and O'Brien shared a bedroom, so it was easy to check in on them. Just before he turned in for the night, Harold would once again check on O'Brien and Aisha at 2:30 a.m. Later on, O'Brien would hear Aisha's bed squeaking, but did not wake up, thinking that she was tossing in her sleep. Some sources give a different timeline, in which they say O'Brien was the last one to see Aisha that morning, that he saw her wake up to go to the bathroom, and a few minutes later would hear squeaking, and he thought that she had returned. At 5:45 a.m., February 14, 2000, on Valentine's Day, and especially Aquila's and Harold's anniversary, Aquila woke up. She went to start the bath for the children, seeing as they didn't have a bath the day before. She would then go to the kids' room to wake them up. She saw O'Brien under the covers and called up to him, and he jumped out of bed. Aquila would realize that Aisha was not in her bed. The first place Aquila looked for Aisha was beside O'Brien's bed, as Aquila would say in a Jet magazine interview that Aisha would sometimes get up at night and lay there. Aquila asked O'Brien if he had seen his sister, but he did not. Aquila would check everywhere in the house for Aisha, but to no avail. Maybe growing a bit concerned, she woke up Harold and relayed to him that she could not find Aisha anywhere. She would go outside to check the cars, but Aisha was not there either. Harold and Aquila would call Harold's sister's house. However, they would find out that Aisha had not gone over. That's when Aquila went into a full-blown panic mode and knew that something was not right. Hearing a car outside, she put on her shoes and ran outside to maybe check on whether Aisha was magically outside or not. Maybe she could have been, who knows? But there was no sign of her. Aquila called her mother and told her that Aisha could not be found anywhere. Aquila's mother told her to hang up the phone and call the police. Harold would make that phone call. There was a transcript of the 911 call, which I will put in the description for y'all to read. 10 minutes after waking up the children, the first police officer arrived on scene at 6:40 a.m. The officer took the parents' statement, and a couple of minutes later, more officers and the sheriff, Sheriff Crawford, would arrive. They even brought in the canine unit to sniff out Aisha's scent. However, the dogs could not pick up the scent due to the rain and the strong winds that occurred the morning of Aisha's disappearance. While police canvassed the house, Harold, Aquila, and O'Brien would go about searching the neighborhood, looking for Aisha. Throughout the day, family members, friends, church members, and neighbors provided support and manpower to help the family look for Aisha. Police would also bring in a helicopter with infrared heat detection to aid in the search. Back at the DeGrees home, police did not find any sign of forced entries and the doors were found to be locked. At the end of the day, only a mitten was found, which Aquila said that did not belong to Aisha, as no winter clothing was taken from the house. No leads and no Aisha at the end of the day. Aquila and Harold checked Aisha's room to see if anything was missing, and there were things missing. Aisha's backpack, along with her Tweety Bird pocketbook and a few articles of clothing, were gone. This plus the locked door made police believe that Aisha may have left the house of her own accord. Not only that, but they suspected that Aisha might have packed up her stuff in the days before her disappearance and was planning to leave. Aisha's parents were skeptical about these findings, saying that Aisha was a cautious girl and she was afraid of dogs, meaning that she didn't leave the house of her own accord often. And they also said that she didn't have problems at school and at home, so it was very unlikely that she left because there was something going on in her life. That evening, on the same day, Aisha's disappearance was broadcasted on local news. Because of the broadcast, two witnesses would come forward, saying that they had seen a girl matching Aisha's description early that morning. A truck driver and a motorist had seen Aisha walk alongside North Carolina's Highway 18. Interestingly enough, that was Aisha's school bus route to school, meaning that Aisha was somewhat familiar with that route. The witnesses claimed to have seen Aisha between the times of 3:30 to 4:15 a.m. They said that she was wearing a long-sleeve white t-shirt. The truck driver, feeling a bit concerned on why there was a small child on the road at that time in the morning, would make a U-turn and try to find that child. Due to the raging storm taking place at that time, he would have to circle 3 more times before finally spotting the girl. When he tried to check on her and called out to her, the girl, maybe getting scared that a stranger was calling out to her, ran into the woods. Stephen Pacheco of the Trace Evidence podcast, who also did an episode of Aisha's disappearance, lives about an hour away from Shelby. He has stated during the episode that while reports wrote that it was a woods that Aisha ran into, that it was more of a tree line instead. Authorities would believe the girl was Aisha. Sheriff Crawford would say, quote, "One Sun Drop truck driver and another motorist have called since they saw that she was missing on television and told officers that they saw a girl walking on the road about that time. We're pretty sure that it was her because of the descriptions they gave are consistent with what we know she was wearing." End quote. On February 15, 2000, Debbie Turner, owner of Turner Upholstery, would go into the storage shed on her property. The shed was used to store furniture and supplies for their business and also stored a tractor. The shed was about 100 yards west of the highway. Debbie would find items that were out of place in the shed, including a green marker, a pencil, and a Mickey Mouse-shaped hair bow. She would not think twice about it and would not tie it back to Aisha's case. It wouldn't be until 17 February 2000 when volunteers would approach the Turners, asking them to check their property for any sign of Aisha, that Debbie would put two and two together. The volunteers would further find candy wrappers. Aisha's teammates would corroborate that the candy wrappers belonged to Aisha, as they were given treat bags with candies inside after their game. Interestingly, they would also find a wallet-sized picture of a little girl, and when showed to Aisha's parents and other community members, no one was able to ID the girl. They even put out the picture of girl in the newspaper, but nobody knew who she was and there was no leads on that front. A week later, on February 20th, 2000, the search was suspended. 9,000 man-hours were invested into the search of Aisha Degree, and yet, like Sheriff Crawford would be quoted saying, "There was never that substantial lead," end quote. Aisha's story was told on the Montel Williams Show, America's Most Wanted, and the Oprah Winfrey Show, though no leads would come from it, and if they did, it didn't really lead anywhere substantial. Another notable event was that the Degrees put up a billboard around the area where Aisha was last seen, presumably asking if anybody who had seen her or had a glimpse of her would come forward with information. The case was unfortunately going cold with little to no leads until one day on August 3rd, 2001, 26 miles or 42 kilometers away from Shelby, in the opposite direction of where Aisha was seen walking, a grading contractor named Terry Fleming found a black plastic bag while using his tractor. He went to check it out, and inside he would find another layer of black plastic bag. Inside the second layer, he would find a beige and black book bag, which contained Aisha's name and phone number. Aisha's name didn't ring bells in his head, but he, quote, "felt strange enough that I didn't feel comfortable with it," end quote. He decided to write the information down and contact it the next day. The next morning, he had mentioned finding the bag to his wife. His wife, knowing who Aisha was and knowing her story, told him to contact the police. The bag was taken by the FBI for further analysis, though the results have not been publicly shared. The police conducted a search along the 6-mile stretch of Highway 18 from Falston to the Cleveland-Lincoln County line. Unfortunately, no leads would turn up. In 2004, an inmate from the county jail gave a tip to police. Cleveland County Sheriff's deputies and North Carolina's State Bureau of Investigation, SIB, followed the tip and started digging at the corner of Shelby and Rube Spangler Roads in Lawndale. However, all they found were skeletal remains of animals. In February 2015, 15 years since the last sighting of Aisha Degree, the Federal Bureau of Investigation announced that FBI agents, SBI, and Cleveland County Sheriff's Office investigators were reopening the case and re-examining every aspect of the case, that they were re-interviewing witnesses and following new leads. They would offer a reward of $25,000 and alongside an extra $20,000 by a community group, a total of $45,000 was offered for, and I quote, information leading to arrest and conviction of the person or persons responsible for her disappearance, end quote. In May of 2016, 15 months after they reopened the case, the FBI released information on a new lead. There were sightings that Aisha may have entered a dark green early 1970s Ford Thunderbird or a Lincoln Mark IV that had rust around the wheel wells. So these two cars are very similar in nature. They look alike. So that's why they put out those two cars, because it could be either or. The FBI stated that they were looking for the cars. In October 2018, the Cleveland County Sheriff's Office would put out more clues relating to the case and appealed for information. The first being a book, McElligot's Pool by Dr. Seuss. It was checked out from the Falston Elementary School Library around Aisha's disappearance, though the school did not have archive dating back to that time. The second clue was the New Kids on the Block t-shirt. So now we will go into the theories, and there are quite a few theories. Due to the lack of evidence in this case, it could be probable of that any of these theories could be true. So the first theory is the sleepwalking theory. It is said by some that she got up from her bed, changed her clothes, picked up her bag, exited the house, and locked the door behind her, all while sleepwalking. Some believers of this theory think that she sleepwalked all the way, while some say that she woke up in the middle of her journey and being disoriented and panicked. She tried to get home, but instead got herself more lost. I feel like this theory is a bit far-fetched, because for her to do all of that and still remain sleeping and going out into the very terrible rain that they had that day, to be soaked from head to toe, to feel the cool air, to just all of this and not wake up, is quite far-fetched for me. This is my opinion. This is not necessarily going to be your opinion. You can have any opinion that you like. But for me, it's hard to see how this theory may come into fruition. Another theory was that she was groomed and abducted by someone she knew, that she was convinced to leave the house. She could have been groomed by either a family member, a family friend, a teacher, or other people close to the family. Maybe she was lured out with the promise of doing something special for her parents' anniversary. Though since the witnesses saw her walking alone on Highway 18, it is possible that the groomer set up to meet at a secondary location, like the storage shed at the Turner's upholstery area. But this does not seem to be a plausible theory, because from the research I did, Aisha was an extremely cautious girl. Even family members cited that she wouldn't follow them or open the door for them without getting her parents' permission. So somebody to be that cautious, that she would be very cautious around, I couldn't find another word for it, sorry, to be very cautious around her own family members, for her to follow somebody in the middle of the night to do something, is something I find really hard to believe. But also, it could be a very plausible opinion. It's just that from the research that I did, she was a very careful girl and would not do anything without her parents' permission. A third theory was that Aisha left thinking that she was going to go on an adventure, but was met with foul play. It is theorized that Aisha was influenced by a book her class was reading at the time called The Whipping Boy by Sid Fleischman. The story revolves around two boys who ran away from home, and it details their adventures. At the end of the stories, though, the boys returned home. It is believed that Aisha may have read this book and wanted to go on her own adventure, was inspired to. There are two sub-theories of foul play involved, one of which was that she was abducted on her journey. The main suspect of this theory was an SOB called Donald Preston Ferguson. He was arrested for the sexual assault and murder of 7-year-old Shalonda Poole. So the case goes something like this. Shalonda Poole shared a room with her twin sister. One day at 6 a.m., her sister would wake up and notice Shalonda was not in her bed and was waiting outside. Shalonda's sister would urge her to come back inside, but weirdly enough, Shalonda would decline. Shalonda's body would be found the next day behind an elementary school. At the time, Donald was arrested in June 1989 for sexually assaulting a 10-year-old girl in Spartanburg, South Carolina. He placed bail and relocated to Greensboro, North Carolina. Shortly after Shalonda's body was found, he moved back to South Carolina. He went to trial in March 1991, was found guilty, and was sentenced to 8 years in prison, but was released in October 1997. In the beginning, another suspect was put on trial for Shalonda's rape and murder, but DNA testing proved that he wasn't the one. The Shalonda case would go cold, but was reopened in 2007. Advancement in forensics would lead the police to Donald, and when DNA was collected from another case, it was tested to the DNA found in the Shalonda Poole case, and it was a match. In December 2014, he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Many believe that due to the similarities of the Shalonda Poole case and Aisha Degree's disappearance, that he was involved in the case. He was free during Aisha's disappearance and was living about 40 miles away from Shelby. It's also important to note that he, with the Shalonda Poole case, he was close to the family and even participated in the search of Shalonda Poole. So I have to say that this is a very plausible explanation, but also I have to think that maybe police have already ruled this out, because maybe they heard about the theory, as this is a very widely accepted theory, and maybe questioned Donald and maybe did not get anywhere with it. I'm not sure. There's no evidence of this. I could not find any statements or articles that the police questioned Donald. So I'm not really sure, but it is a very plausible theory. Another sub-theory is that she met with foul play, as in she got into a hit and run. So it's theorized that maybe a driver, because apparently this road is very, like the host of the Trace Evidence podcast, Steven, he said that the road is very dim, and it's possible that somebody did not see Aisha and hit into her, and instead, and feeling panicked, they disposed of her body and disposed of her things too. Though I don't know why they disposed of her things in the way that they did, I'm not sure, but it also is a very plausible explanation. The thing with this case is there's so little evidence involved that any one of these theories and a lot more could be the reason of what happened to Aisha. Nobody knows, and I think it's really sad. So to this day, the Degrees have not given up hope that they will find Aisha and continue to keep her memory alive. In 2008, the Degrees set up a scholarship in Aisha's name. In an effort to keep the case alive, they organize a walk every year on Valentine's Day, though more recently, it is held just before Valentine's Day. The walk starts from the Degree's home to the spot where Aisha was last seen. Not only is this to encourage the case to live on, to make sure that people remember Aisha, but it's also a way for them to get money to continue looking at Aisha's case. Orion has grown up and has a daughter of his own. Aquila and Harold continue to live in the same house and have not changed their number, in hopes that Aisha will come home. And that is the story of the mysterious disappearance of Aisha Degree. This case really is so interesting in the sense, and so morbid in the sense, that there's not that much evidence to go on. It's hard to be in this case. It's very frustrating to be in this case and to follow this case and realize that you don't know what has happened to her. You can't know what has happened to her, because while they found certain evidence, it does not clue into a theory, a probable theory, a substantial theory that we know what happened to Aisha. And I think that's really sad, but I really hope that Aisha will be found one day, and hopefully she will be alive. And that's all we can do for now, and I hope the authorities of the Aisha Degree case will continue to put in their best effort into locating her. And that is the case of Aisha Degree. So I hope you guys learned something from this case, and I really hope that, you know, with these cases, it's hard to feel like, it's always easy to feel like there's no hope, but I do put out hope that Aisha will be found one day. And yeah, so that is all for today, guys. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next week. Thank you so much, guys. Bye.
Mens rea is the legal principle of criminal intent. It means literally the guilty mind. Join me, Sinead, every fortnight to discuss Ireland and the UK's most heinous crimes and the court cases that followed. Do you want to know more about a kink killing in Dublin in 2012? Or serial killers in Scotland? Whatever your guilty pleasure, you'll find it and all the details with me. Find Mens Rea wherever you get your podcasts.